We are now with the Tidewater Realty and Security Corporation lease grant application.
All right.
Something completely different.
Does not involve the
Agree.
This is not a Habitat case. This, I'll take off my Habitat hat and put on my chief engineer hat for the engineering surveying department. This is the Worcester Ground lease application. And this is about as complicated as it could possibly be.
Wonderful. Chief, thank you so much.
Just a forewarning. It may influence what you want to do. We've been working on this since last spring, the initial, and we've had a request from the applicant that it not be heard. As of today, after believing we had worked out a compromise with both the applicant and the protestant last Friday. I've been called again this morning and talked to Tony for about 20 minutes. And basically kind of rehashed every issue that's involved with this since spring. So we have three options for the commission to consider. One is to grant the deferral to hear it for another month. But there are repercussions for that from a staff's perspective. And if we do brief this, which the second option is that we go ahead and brief you on this case. We have a recommendation. It is not the recommendation that's in your packet. Those things were changing every day last week as I talked to the applicant and the protestant. Well, we have a compromise we think is reasonable and we believed as of Friday was acceptable to both parties, and I believe still may be acceptable to the applicant. I believe they may be slightly confused about the process. So we would brief it, and one of the reasons we want to brief it is there's a court case involved with this, which you will hear if we do brief it, that we have promised the court we'd have this resolved at this meeting for them to make their final decision related to some criminal matters in June. We asked for a second delay from the court. The first court case, when it was heard, we asked them to allow some nets in this area to stay on unleased bottom until we could hear this case, thinking we were going to hear it in April and have it resolved by the May court date. Unfortunately, I had to go back to the judge and tell him that was not the case, and I'll explain why if we brief it, but that we would definitely have it on the May agenda. We'd have a resolution for him so he could finalize the court case. We don't think it's fair to the person that's in court that this keeps getting delayed. He has met his requirement that the court required, but it was continued because of this one little issue, and looks like now it might be continuing another month if we cannot give him resolution on the lease, which means this guy comes back to court, has to pay an attorney, you know, two more times or an additional time. The third option would be that we hear it. You hear what our recommendation is. You make a decision of some kind, whether it's our recommendation, something else. And if the applicant is not happy with that, that we would bring it back next month when she can be here, or hopefully it's next month, for her to speak on any issues that she still has there. That's a little bit out of unusual, and I'm sorry your counsel stepped out because he may have to weigh in on that third option, and Tony may want to address it too. But normally, once you made a decision, her option would be appeal to court if she wasn't satisfied. But she has asked to defer it. She is a doctor. She has a practice, even though I gave her a considerable advance warning that it would be on this month's agenda, I believe. She's unable to be here today, and that's where we are. So, if somebody wants to add anything, you can.
When did you give her that notification then?
Well, we've been talking to her for months. Again, if you brief it, all this will come out, but quickly, she had indicated she wanted to get a private surveyor to do this. And we implored her that, one, that might not be the best idea in this case because it was some complicated issues with court, with illegal activity, but that she had that option, but that we needed to work with her surveyor. Months went by without hearing back from her. We kept asking her to have our surveyor contact us. Finally, when we went to court and got this most recent extension to allow these nets to stay, we pressured her pretty hardly that you either have to produce a survey from your surveyor or we need to do it because we need to get this resolved. At that point, she said, well, there'd been miscommunication between her and her surveyor, and that, well, just, we could do it after all. So we scrambled to get it surveyed exactly 30 days ago. So the 30-day period for the plat, I could approve the preliminary plat, have the full 30 days, so that if you acted today, we could assign it. So, yes, she knew well in advance that we were targeting this month to be on the agenda. Now, her issue is that she is a doctor. She had full cases scheduled today. She's going out of town or out of the country next week, so she feels slammed. You know, she couldn't really take any time off. She did indicate one day last week that maybe she could take an hour off at lunch and come, but obviously.
All right, and this issue was first raised more than a year ago.
Yes, she complained to the commissioner.
My predecessor, for the record.
Predecessor, Jack Travis.
All right, go through the three options real quickly that's now before us here to make a decision on how to proceed.
First decision would be to grant her request not to hear it at all today, in the room, what I've already said, and we would attempt to schedule it again next month. Hopefully that she can be here for the next available meeting that she's available. That's one option. Second option is to give you our recommendation, which again, we believe we have resolved with both the protest and the applicant at the end of last week. Commission make a decision, and that's the decision. Third option is, and I guess her option then would be to appeal. She didn't like it. Third option would be to hear it, brief you, make a decision. Unhappy with the decision, we would grant her, I guess we'd continue it, and we've made a decision. That's why I wanted you to hear this the second time, to weigh in on this last option. To allow her to come back next month and say whatever it is that she needs to say that the problem with the commission's decision. Having understood that we worked this out with her last week and she was in agreement with what we're going to recommend.
So I can catch up.
Just we make a decision, she appeals it, which I think would follow the code. Third option would be to make a decision, but it's contingent really on her agreeing with it, which, you know, I'm not sure legally whether we have to continue the case, really.
The only thing I'll add to, with your confusion, that even more, Ben's done a great job of explaining some of the circumstances we face here, is that if you make a decision under that third option and she says, okay, that's great, I understand now, I accept that, we're in a position to be able to go to the court and say, hey, we've resolved it. And that's what we would hope we could do by resolving it with Ms. Fulton, either, you know, beforehand, as Ben has pointed out from last week, or give us that opportunity if you think some option here is approvable in terms of
I'm kind of loath at setting the precedent here that we would make a decision that would be, in effect, only acceptable if the applicant agreed to it after the fact.
It would just, you make a good point, and it's a valid concern. The only thing is, if she didn't agree to it, we're just back here next month for you to completely hear the case again and then make your decision based on whatever else testimony she did. It just gives her an odd stuff to go to her with and say, hey, the commission has looked at everything. Here's what they feel the circumstances are. If you don't like that option, we're at option one or option two.
I think under just quick legal advice,
yep.
Act on the application or table it. All this ifs, ands, or buts are really just going to complicate things way beyond what they need to be. And it doesn't make it any easier for me in court.
Correct. Has the applicant asked for this to be tabled?
The applicant, as of this morning, did ask that it be deferred so she could be here. So, I mean, we can deal with the court issue. We'll deal with it however it is. I mean, let's go back to the judge, I guess.
What's pending before the court? This is like, I mean, I kind of caught that, and I'm wondering what that is.
Well, it's all spent, without briefing it, there's nets on clam beds on an unleased bottom.
Okay.
Partially within this, where this application is.
So it's a violation of 1203.
So it's a violation, right. The person who put the nets down was taken to court because he wouldn't remove them
both derelict nets and actual.
Trespassing on state on bottom. Got it.
Yes. And was convicted.
Okay.
He was ordered to remove all derelict nets and bags. But we asked the court, because we by this time had gotten this application, if they would allow the active nets to remain to protect the clams that have been planted until we could get the ground leased so that they would then be legal. If you can put nets on a lease.
So the applicant is the trespasser?
No. The applicant is not the trespasser.
So how does this remedy the problem?
As soon as it's leased, we believe
the applicant would take over.
Well, if I brief it all, you'll hear all.
No, let me try to get to the bottom. And I'm not trying to.
Complicated. We believe there will be a. We hope, and it's a private matter. But there is negotiations currently going on. We understand between the violator, the owner of the clams. This guy's a co-oper who planted them, so he was provided the clams by a company, planted them in the wrong place, for lack of way of saying it. And we believe there will be a negotiation once this is leased and the beds are now legal and the nets are legal between the applicant, the owner of the clams, and the person who put the nets on.
So let me make sure.
They can be harvested in the future. If the nets are removed now, the clams will all be lost because the rays will come in.
Right.
Little tiny clams, and they'll be wiped out.
Right. Okay.
So the court's aware of all this. The court's aware that, and that's why they allowed the nets to stay. In the spirit of compromise, that we might be able to work this out so that we've been told $18,000 worth of clams will not be lost. That's the value of planted.
So is there any indication that the applicant would just take over these nets and say, yeah, I want these here? Because I guess the applicant would want the seed oyster.
Once it's signed, the nets and the clams are the applicant. And how that's resolved between her the party that planted them is a civil matter.
Yeah, that's not here.
That would be legal. Right now, the clams are the state's because they're on state-owned land.
It's still state-owned land. We're just leasing it.
Right. But we would argue that once it's leased, when you lease something, the resource that's already there.
Right. Then it becomes a lessee's problem.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is basically say, Judge, we want to get it leased so it can be somebody else's problem.
Well, yeah, to put it bluntly, I guess.
I'm trying to be blunt because I'm trying to get to the bottom of it.
We're also trying to get the person who had the violation has met the court's requirement to remove everything except the nets that we asked the court to let him keep. And
pending resolution of the application.
He's continuing to come to court to try to get his case resolved.
All right.
And I promised the judge we'd have it done, too. So I'm trying to save my own face here, to be honest, but it is what it is, and if we have to go back to the court and say it's still not resolved, he may say the nets have to be removed. I'm not going to wait any longer.
Well, he may. The court will certainly do what it needs to do. The only thing you could do with respect to that issue is go back to the court, explain that there's been a continuance. And that's what needs to be done because the court deserves an update. And just let them know that, ask them to continue it generally until the commission makes a decision, then you'll let the court know. He may set a status date. He may do something else. But I think that's the way to handle it with the court. That's just a suggestion.
That's why we brought it to the commission.
And in the meantime, let me ask this. How long will your briefing take?
15 minutes.
Well, we just spent 10 minutes discussing whether or not you should brief it.
The main points already, so,
Well, I'll tell you what. How about this for a game plan? How about you brief it, and then we decide based on any other public comment that is from the audience, then decide where we should take it from there.
Okay.
We can do the same thing like we did with the last application and table it for 2 months if we need to.
Yeah.
Does that seem to be a prudent way forward, Mr. Erskine?
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Is the protest in here?
No. Nope.
Okay.
The protestant was under the belief Friday that the compromise that I thought the applicant was agreeable to would resolve his objections and he would be happy with it.
The only reason I ask is if he made the trip here to hear the case, that he should be afforded the opportunity to discuss it.
He actually asked to have it deferred to last week, earlier in the week, because he was going to be on vacation this week with his wife, and didn't want to have to miss this vacation that he promised he'd take her on because it was a holiday week. Why did we schedule this right after the holiday? He said, I told you a month ago it was going to be in May as well.
And I believe he's
going
to be here.
The applicant and then talked to the protester on Friday. He said, if that's going to be your revised recommendation, not the one you have in your packet, then I will drop my protest.
Okay, thank you.
And I will not be here.
Why don't we brief it and then move on from there?
Yes.
I that seems to be the prudent way of moving forward at this point.
I'll get you one by one.
That would be great. Please proceed.
Okay. All right. So this is an application by Tidewater Realty and Security Corporation to lease, at the time of the application, approximately 6 acres of leased ground, some of which is in Cherrystone Creek and some of which would be in Mill Creek, which is a tributary to Cherrystone, in Northampton County. And the application was protested at a point by Mr. Mark Sanford. So this is Cherrystone Creek. Chesapeake Bay is off the screen here to the left. This is going up the creek. The application is in this area right here, as you see. This is Mill Creek. This is a very small creek that kind of drops up in here. And this is Cherrystone Creek. As you can see, Cherrystone Creek is heavily leased. And it's a big planning area. So this is zooming in a little closer. This is the subject application. This piece of property is known as the Odin property. It is owned by, Mr. Odin is now deceased, and I'm not sure what legal name they currently have the Upland property in, but Tidewater Realty and Security is a family corporation of the Odin, Mr. Odin's children's. This is an entity, and they have a lease out here, very old one. You can tell by the flat file number. It's 400 number. It's in that same name. So in case somebody wants to ask, it says Realty and Security. They have provided us with an affidavit that this corporation meets the code requirement to hold horse ground, and they've held this piece of ground for a couple of years in this name. They transferred it out of the old name into Tidewater Realty. So we believe that, you know, they can legally apply and hold horse ground. So this is the subject area of the application. I'll highlight it a little better just so you can see the boundaries. That's basically the area that we wrote the application for. I'll stop there to get into some of the nitty-gritty of the complications here. Back early last year, we received a complaint directly to the commissioner, is my understanding, from Dr. Fulton, about existing clam beds, which you can see them in this photograph. Each one of these little dark bar areas, some of them are outside the lease, which is the problem. See, all of these were not in the lease. These are all beds planted on just state land, not leased. And there are beds out here. It's hard to see in this photograph, but all of these areas have clam beds on them. And this is the way they do them on the shore. They plant rectangular beds and then put nets over them with the small sandbag type apparatus to hold the corners down and keep the rays out. This is very productive clam ground in this area. And these are beds again over here. And as you saw in the earlier slide, we do have an application now for this area, which would encompass most of these beds. Now, this is a dated photograph. All the beds are not exactly in these same locations. But in any event, we got a complaint from Dr. Fulton related to a gentleman named Ray Parks. And the allegation at the time was that Mr. Forrest had planted clam beds in conjunction with Mr. Lusk, who has this lease between the Tidewater lease and the shoreline of the Odin property. Further investigation into what was really happening, we ascertained that Ray Forrest is a waterman on the shore who does co-op planning for one or more companies over there, where they'll provide someone clams and they will do the planning and maintaining them, usually with a work crew. And we don't get involved in that financial arrangement of how that's done, but they hire people out to do that. What we found out was that Ray Forrest does do that for a number of people. He was doing it for the Odin family for years. And what we believe happened was there was a disagreement about payment between Mr. Forrest and the Odin family related to the planting of beds. And that these particular beds that the complaint, which there were in this tidal area that's not leased currently and out into the Lusk lease, were not actually Mr. Lusk clams. They were actually Cherry Stone Aquafarm clams, who Mr. Lusk had told Forrest he could use some of his lease to plant them on. He didn't mind. He was working the northern part of his lease. Fortunately, they were planted both on the Lusk lease and in here. And like I said, further investigation indicated that there had been some dispute between Mr. Forrest and the Odin family, and they were trying to get him off their property. He had his net apparatus set up on the upland where they rolled the net out and cut the length. So he was staging this. It was a staging area here for any work he was doing in the area. We eventually, both the commissioner, former commissioner Travis Stead, and I met with Dr. Fulton here at the main office. We went over the issues, and there's a lot more issues involved here about this lease and her belief that this was actually mean low water when it was surveyed, but it's not really germane to this current issue, although I think she's confusing a lot of it in her own mind. In any regard, we told her we would go out and establish approximate mean low water here so we could determine where these beds were, which ones were on a lease, which ones were not on a lease, and which ones might actually be above low water, which we could do nothing about. That was a civil matter. And a few of these beds actually did extend above what we believe is mean low water, but just minor. So in doing that work with Paul Rogers, who's a surveyor on the shore, we did notice that there was a whole lot of derelict gear here, nets. So what happens over there, sometimes they take the nets up, they harvest the clams, and they basically just discard the net right there on the bottom, and it's all balled up in a pile, and it's abandoned. The bags the same. They're small bags that have sand in them or rock sand mixture to hold the nets down. They'll pull those out, and they won't remove all the gear from the water and put it back up on the outside. Some of this stuff is reusable, but it's a problem on the shore, and it's not just here. It's all over. So at that point, we got law enforcement involved in trying to ascertain. We by this time figured out it was Mr. Forrest was probably the person that put these in. He was contacted repeatedly starting in August about getting up the derelict nets. We also accepted the application from Dr. Fulton when she came over and met with us here in the office and explained to her, you could apply for this area if you like. She did. She wanted to apply for it. And basically, she wanted to apply for what was available, what you see here. We accepted the application. We started the public interest review. Independently, law enforcement contacted Forrest. He agreed to remove the derelict nets, and we told him that the existing beds that were netted that were not derelict also needed to be removed because they were not on leased bottom. After a number of attempts to get him to do something, in October, he allegedly came to our office on Veterans Day, I think. It was a state holiday, and according to him, to talk to us about what he had done and what he hadn't done. And we believe he harvested the clams that were there. I had been out there and walked it, and you could feel the clam, and they were big enough at this point to be harvested. When you walk over the net, you could feel them under your feet. Unfortunately, he replanted some of the same area with new clam beds, and he didn't really remove much of the derelict gear. So he was charged at that point, and there was some court delay dates for him for different reasons that always happen. You know, the lawyer couldn't be there. So we didn't really get to court until this year. During the same time, during the public interest review, we did get a protest from Mark Sanford, and here's the other complicating factor. Mark Sanford had applied for this same area previously. Maybe not up in here, but he applied for all of this area of Mill Creek, basically. It was protested by the Odin family. They didn't want clamming right up against their shoreline. They said they used this area for recreational purposes, and they didn't really want clamming right up against the shore. And that they also didn't want Mill Creek blocked for access to navigation for both them, because this is their pier, and property owners that may live up the creek. The compromise, they did go to the commission. The compromise was to lease this area to Mr. Sanford, and the commission deemed not to lease this, but they did not set it aside. They did not designate it as not to be leased in the future. They just at that point denied that portion of it and leased this period. Not too long thereafter, Mr. Stanford sold the lease and no longer owns it. So this lease is in another party's name. However, when Mr. Stanford saw this application, he felt that the commission had already decided this case once before. This was his argument, and that this area right in here should not be leased to anyone because they didn't lease it to him, and that was his interpretation. Now, there's a copy of the minutes in your book of that meeting. He was here, even though on the phone he claimed he didn't even come. He was here, Mr. Stanford, and you can see the motion. The motion was not to lease it, but it didn't really address, and by code, unless the commission takes specific action not to lease the ground, I think our hands are tied. If someone comes in the next day and applies for it, we have to accept the application. We might tell them, you know, you just made a decision not to lease this. The chance of getting it is not good. But in any event, we accepted it. So that's his argument, is that, you know, and his arguments were he was opposing it for the same reason the Oden family opposed him, which I don't, as you can see in my evaluation, we don't really think they hold a lot of weight because the Oden family protested it as the adjacent landowner and for navigation reasons. He's not an adjacent landowner. He doesn't even have this lease anymore. He has no leases in this area. So I'm not sure what his argument is other than he feels he was treated unfairly back then and that it's not right to give it to somebody else, even though this is now the adjacent landowner he's supplying. So that's the complicating factor with Mr. Sands. So we did survey it, and we surveyed it basically the way you see it here. So this is the plat of the actual survey. Again, there's the existing lease that Mr. Stanford did have and no longer owns. We left, and it doesn't look like much of an area here, but if you're in the field, you could see it better. We left a little area here for navigation to go around this. We can't do anything about this lease, which does take up the whole creek. I mean, once you get here, you've got to pretty much go over this lease to try to address at least the navigation concern. Since she applied all the way up, we included this area, including the area of her pier, and this area. This little box here is the existing beds of the subject of the court case and that are still there. It nets over this little funny-looking, kind of oddly-shaped, rectangular area. This was going to be our recommendation, what you see right here, to lease this, in spite of the protest. However, Mr. Stanford implored me again last week what I at least asked Dr. Oden if she'd be willing to not lease this area. He didn't oppose her leasing this area out in Cherrystone, but he still felt that this was an area the commission hadn't leased before, and they ought to stand by that and not lease it at all. I did relay that to Dr. Fulton late last week and had a long conversation with her, explained the whole court case issue with her, and that we wanted to hear it because at this point she had already said she couldn't be here and wanted to defer it. That our recommendation would be that we come here and today and recommend that it be leased basically from right here across in this corner 8 over to this corner. Can't read the number of it. I think it's 53. And all that area to the north. That would encompass the existing beds. That would solve our problem with the judge. Then that would be leased. We could lease this immediately after your decision, sending or paying for it, survey. And that we would recommend not leasing this. She agreed to that. She actually said to me, well, I thought we weren't going to lease up in there anyway from some previous conversation. I don't really recall that. And again, as I said earlier, she had indicated they were going to get a private surveyor to do this, and that never happened. And when we pushed her that we needed it on the agenda this month, that this was in April now, I'm telling her this, that we needed to get the survey done ASAP. She agreed to it. She provided the stakes. And we got it surveyed so that it would be exactly 30 days. We surveyed it exactly 30 days ago so that the infield marking would meet the code requirements. So you could approve it today legally. So that gets us up to snuff on where we are and our recommendation. And so our altered recommendation and what's in the agenda is instead of recommending approving this plat as 4.95 acres, we would recommend approving just the northern portion, which comes out to about 2 acres, 1.95. Dr. Fulton was told all this information last week. Mark Stanford on Friday said, if that would be our recommendation, to just lease the northern portion, that he would drop his protest only if the commission's approval included that this area, this southern area, or this area within Mill Creek, be specifically designated as by the commission as an area not to be leased. That would be subject to any future commission action. That doesn't mean someone couldn't come in and request it. But if the commission, we believe if the commission took, and we have precedent, this has been done in other areas where the commission has not set it aside as public ground, but just set it aside as not to be leased for whatever reason. Here we believe the rationale would be it would leave this area open for navigation, clearly, if we don't lease any of this. That's one good reason to not do it. And it would resolve the protest. We believe Dr. Fulton had agreed to that. We know Mr. Sanford is in agreement to it. And so that's the complicating factor, that if you approve this today and take action, it's kind of a two-step thing. We'd approve the lease, the northern area. But his objection would still stand if we don't designate this area to the south as not to be leased. If we just did the same thing we did last time, we're not going to lease it right now. The difference would be if we designate it that, if the commission designates it that way, if someone comes in and tries to put in an application for this, we would not take it. We would tell them, you need to go to the next commission meeting at the public comment period and say, whether it's next month or 10 years from now, and say, things have changed in Mill Creek. I think the commission should reconsider leasing this area, and you all could make a new decision then. But up until that time, we would not accept an application because the commission has taken action to say, no, we're not going to lease this thing. It is subject to commission changing their mind in the future. We even have precedent for this for public ground. There was a public ground created in Broad Bay for 10 years by the commission, and my opinion was it expired at 10 years. Bob Graff said we should take it back to the commission and see what they want to do. We did, and the commission reapproved it, but they put no sunset clause on it. They basically said it's public ground, but it was by commission action, not by the Constitution, not by the General Assembly. So it's still technically, the public ground in Broad Bay is still subject to commission coming back in and saying, you know what, that's a valuable area that should be leased. No one's using it for public use. We're going to change your mind and lease it. But that would only be if someone came in and requested that specifically. Again, we would not take an application on the Broad Bay area either right now because it's been set aside as public ground. This wouldn't be public ground unless you want to call it that. I wouldn't recommend it here. So that's where we are. I think I've tried to go through it relatively quickly and cover all the issues. So the court case, as I alluded to earlier, the last time we were in court, the judge, Mr. Forrest, per our law enforcement, Mr. Rogers, and myself were all there. We all agreed. We visited the site. Mr. Forrest had upheld his end of the bargain with the court, which was to remove all the derelict gear here. We had previously asked the court to let the existing bed net stay until from the previous court date until we could come back and see if he met it. So he'd done what the court asked him to do. The only reason they didn't finalize a decision at that case was because I said, we still have these existing beds with nets on them, and we don't have it leased yet. We would like for the court to bless allowing them to stay, giving some authorization for them to stay for another 30 days until we can get this assigned. Unfortunately, I was hoping he would just say, you know what, Mr. Forrest, you've met your obligations. The charge is now dismissed against you. Have a nice day, your court costs, whatever. The judge deemed, well, there's still nets out there, and Mr. Forrest put them down, so I don't want to release them yet. I want to continue the case, which I understood, because that's leverage still to make him do something if we have to. Suppose we don't lease this, then it's still an issue. But so there. Hey.
That's clear as mud.
I don't believe there's still anybody here.
I don't see any. I'm looking, and maybe I'm missing something. I don't see any provision that ties the commission's hands if somebody objects to an oyster ground lease. I mean, he'll remove his objection if. what legal consequence does his objection have? I mean, I'm looking through the code here. Maybe you can help me then. Maybe I'm missing something, but he protested. He protested.
Y'all know Mr. Sanford.
Whoever's protesting is subject to the, is that Mr. Sanford? Is
right.
he a repairing owner there?
No.
He's not even a repairing owner.
He was the previous applicant. Commission leased this to him, but not this at the time.
So he's not even a repairing owner is the point I'm trying
he
to make.
He has no property in this area. He owns no leases in this area.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something.
No, I appreciate it. I got it.
He was protesting before.
I understand. I understand more now. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something because riparian owners do have certain priority rights.
And I tried to explain to him. I said, he said, I'm protesting on the same grounds they protested me. I said, they're not the same grounds. The protestants last time were the riparian landowners.
And that makes it different.
That's what I thought, but...
Anyhow, all right.
Mr. Packard.
Thank you, Ben.
As a follow-up to that, now, just so I'm clear, Mr. Mark Sanford is Mr. Mark Sanford from Virginia Beach, correct? This is the guy who had the pound net issues with this.
Yes, that is the same gentleman, although they have business interests on the shore as well, both him and his brother, I believe.
Uh-huh. But that's who it is. Okay.
Yes, the same, that's the same guy. He's here for fisheries issues quite often. He does a number of things. He fishes, I think he likes crabs as well. And yes, they have oyster crabs in Virginia Beach.
So, so that I'm clear, the new staff recommendation is to approve the 1.95 acres stretching north along the upland to, in effect, the current upland owner, and that to not lease the bottom portion of this application.
South of that, all the way up to the next and hopefully, because this is where it gets tricky with Sanford. He would like for the commission to make some kind of designation that this area is not to be leased. It's to be left. We believe the rationale we could give is that it's for navigation purposes. But that's
okay.
Our original recommendation was to lease it all, as you see it right here. But I think he said he wouldn't come today based on this resolution, which I had agreement from Dr. Fulton at the time I talked to him.
Did Dr. Fulton's agreement change? This is what he keeps saying at the time.
When he talked to her, I was just sitting in the room, but it appears it changed.
Well, she had previously said she didn't want it heard, but Ben tried to work it out with her, and he thought we had a resolution. Her comment to me this morning was she still wanted it tabled. She was not quite clear on the circumstances and issues, and she went into some other history and concern, and she, as I recall, indicated she had talked to a surveyor about what the lines meant, and they wanted more time to understand.
And I make a comment about that, just so you're clear. Again, she had indicated she was going to hire a private surveyor. That didn't happen. And I understand that she mentioned this again this morning, and maybe she showed this. I sent her a copy of this plat, the draft plat, with my explanation when I was talking to her. And while we would certainly entertain another surveyor's interpretation of where low water is at this location, that maybe we didn't get it right, although I think we did. I've been over there half a dozen times at low tide with the surveyor, Paul. The commission gets to make the decision of where we lease. And we, I believe, have a little more authority on determining where we believe low water is than just the normal surveyor. We're not all certified surveyors. I don't know what would germanely change here if her surveyor were to actually physically go over there and do some field work, because we still get the final decision. Had her surveyor done this and it didn't look exactly like this, we would have evaluated it, we would have accepted it or not accepted it, and if we didn't accept it, we would have gone back to the surveyor and told him why we think he's got something wrong here, and I think we'd have worked that out with the surveyor. Which was why I kind of advised her that in this particular case, we would probably be the best people to do all the work here because of the legal things that are going on, but that we don't want to discourage private industry, and we certainly allow people to use private surveyors. They're certified by the state. They're qualified to do it. But, sorry, that's a long explanation for her mentioning that, I guess, to Tony, that over the weekend, apparently, she may have had some conversation with her surveyor who said, well, we need to study this.
So she does not, at this point, wish to leave the southern portion of this application.
To be honest,
is that correct?
I don't really know what she wants. I can only tell you Friday, I explained this very clear to her and backed the whole thing up to the court case and again.
Okay.
Let me try this. Can I, Commissioner?
But let me try.
I,
let me try
thought her. She was agreeing to not leave the city. She's okay with that.
Let me try this. We bifurcate these two sections into a northern section and a southern section, and we make a decision based on a public hearing we have now on the 1.95 acres in the northern section. We hold in abeyance the southern portion. That solves our immediate problem, the court case and the gear that's on it. We make a decision on whether to assign it to the upland property owner. If they wish to proceed with the southern end of this lease, they can do so at a future date. That removes Mark Sanford's protest from this as well. Does that go near where you were thinking?
I was actually going to try to cut to the chase even more. Did she withdraw her application?
Did she withdraw her application?
Yes, sir.
She has not withdrawn her application.
And that's what's before the commission, but that's certainly that's the practical solution.
I don't think that was even offered by us or her.
Well, that seems to me the practical solution is resolve the problems that are before us here, and if they wish to come back in another bite at the apple here for the southern portion of that lease, certainly can do that.
Are they any way restricted from applying for a lease time frame? Like if they apply for a portion of a lease and gets denied, do they have to wait a year or anything like that?
Well, that's an interesting question.
I'm getting no's from everybody in the audience.
Well,
my opinion, having worked here since 83, and worked in the engineering surveying department most of that time, except for a couple of years of exclusively being in Habitat, is there is no time constraint unless the commission specifically puts that. Tony's predecessor would argue against that. He would say that engineering surveying should use the same criteria Habitat uses, that you cannot come back and apply for a year for the same area that you had applied for before.
Yeah, but this is a statutory prohibition for the year.
I don't think the statute really supports
it. Yeah, it doesn't support. Okay. All right. I mean, I just wanted to make sure that we weren't prejudicing the applicant.
I don't think that this methodology would.
No.
And the commission has the authority whether or not to lease some, all, or part of this entire lease application.
That's true.
So, to that end, we would make a decision on the northern end and hold the southern one in limbo for the time being until they decide what they want to do with it.
I'm ready to write down the motion because I got to make sure I understand.
I'm not making the motion. I want to make sure that's clear.
Parties that might be involved.
Mr. Erskine.
I have a question, Ben. When the application was submitted for this oyster ground by Tidewater Realty, did the use plan that was submitted indicate that they wished to plant shellfish or sublease it, or what was the intended use?
What they filled out was that they would use it for oyster clam aquaculture. I think at that point, Dr. Fulton acknowledged that some, including the Mill Creek part of it, the whole area we surveyed, that they might still entertain working with someone, maybe not Mr. Forrest, because their relationship is soured, to grow clams on some of this area. But in honesty, I think they want to control this area and so that someone else is not leasing it and doing things that they may not want to be done there, or in a magnitude that is beyond what they might want.
As a follow-up?
Yes, Ms. Hurston.
And I see that they have at least lease number 464 to the north. That's the only other lease. And do they report production? And do they report production on?
Yes, that lease has produced and continues to produce.
Okay, thank you.
Does that sound like
not much area in this creek, Cherrystone Creek, that's not producing clams somewhere on somebody's lease, and off of them too. That's
anyone have any questions to Mr. Stagg at this point? Well, shall we proceed? This is a public hearing. If anybody wish to be heard in favor of this application? Seeing none. Is there anyone here who wishes to protest this application? Is Mr. Mark Sanford present?
He is not.
The matter is...
This would be the area approximately that we've leased. Again, you can see the clam beds here. This is an older photograph, but you can see how extensive clam beds
plans are planted there. Those are all reasons there.
Hearing no one to speak either in favor or opposed to this application, here the matter is before the commission for discussion and possible action. Mr. Taggart.
I was on Cherrystone Creek yesterday. I didn't know there was all this turmoil there. But I do know this area from, well, Dr. Oden was a friend of mine. Just like everywhere, this area is shallow water. Navigation is problematic, I would say. And I would move in favor of because of that, the 1.95-acre northern part lease only. Does that make logical sense to you?
That's a motion to approve the northernmost 1.95 acres for this application.
Yeah.
And do you have an explanation on the southern part of this application?
I think if the family wants to come back and release the rest of it, and we can debate that, and Mr. Sanford can be here, I think it will just be a bit more democratic process. Both applicant and protestant would be here, where now it seems to make sense to make our judicial system move forward in Eastville. This would seem like a good resolution to a problem at hand.
Mr. Erskine?
Just a clarification on the motion. So the southern portion would remain unleased?
Unleased, yes. Simply unleased.
Okay.
But not set aside?
Not set aside.
I'll second that.
All right. We have a motion to approve the lease of the 1.5 acres in the northern 1.95 acres in the northern part of this application, and to not lease the southern portion, but not to set it aside. We agree. Right. Motion and a second. Any discussion on that?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Erskine.
I just wanted to make a comment. The reason I asked about, you know, productivity and things, I think we have an issue, not an issue, but we have a setting a precedent possibly in the Commonwealth about new oyster leases, oyster ground applications coming up, and I think it's really important that we as a commission look at these individually as they pose different restrictions and circumstances, and to the best of our ability determine that they're being used in the proper manner for production of shellfish, and this seems to be the case, so I'd certainly be in favor of that. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Well, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The motion, any noes? Motion passes unanimously.